Welcome to A Higher Branch, a source of practical and powerful information for busy people dedicated to boosting their personal health and professional performance. I'm your host, Sam McCall. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of A Higher Branch, where I am presenting part two of my episode that I recorded with Lynn McPherson on hypnotherapy and how a lot of our anxieties are locked away deep in our subconscious. And as hard as we may try, we cannot control that anxiety until we unlock the subconscious and find out the source. So for those of you new to our podcast, Lynn is a hypnotherapist who over many years has cured and healed people with trauma and anxiety, even after many years of traditional therapy. I've known her for a few years now, and she's done some remarkable things for some people simply because she sees anxiety as a message with clues. So in the last episode, we approached really hypnotherapy from the perspective of how living in the moment gives you that power to unlock the subconscious. And we talked about the typical anxieties that most people carry with them, the difference between hypnotherapy and talk therapy, which is what a lot of us are used to, all right? You sit down opposite a psychologist, and now that can take, for some people, many months or years. But with hypnotherapy, when you tap into the subconscious, you get to the source. And the reason why hypnotherapy is not very popular or has this stigma attached to it is it's very personal. And I will admit that you can come across, people are scared of this modality because they may come across hypnotherapists that are not so caring and maybe they're not comfortable with that hypnotherapist. I can tell you from experience, from seeing Lynn myself and referring to lots of people, she makes you feel so at ease, and it will come across in part two of my podcast with her. So this week, we're going to take a deeper dive into hypnotherapy and how it's not a one-size-fits-all treatment. And I also ask Lynn why she loves doing what she does and how she fits time into her busy schedule for her own time. And that's something you'll find instructive because we often leave ourselves last when it comes to our work and our personal life and our relationships. So in this episode, we are going to take a deeper dive into the topic of relationships and how hypnotherapy can improve your relationship. So sit back, relax, and enjoy part two of my interview with Lynn McPherson. Let's get on to relationships.
Sure.
And as I said, one of the most popular podcasts last year was How to Fix a Broken Heart with Dr. Guy Winch.
Mm.
And you will meet Guy in 2023.
Oh, I'm excited.
Upgrade your life.
Yes.
Yes, everyone that meets Guy.
And Luke. So Guy and Luke.
Yes. Now, there's a lot of people experiencing breakup in the world,
yeah.
Right? And where I think all this emotional trauma of breakups.
Mm.
Actually, let's rewind. Before a breakup, there's this sense there's always one or two people in a relationship, so one or both, that attaches their happiness to the other person.
Yeah, which is not a good thing.
Not a good thing. And so then if the relationship suffocates for whatever reason and they have a breakup, that's a trauma.
It is.
People hang on. That's a trauma. So I want to get your ideas.
And it will not clear until you clear it. This is the thing. And if you don't clear it, your tendency will be to repeat the same pattern.
Or stops you from going into another relationship.
Exactly.
But what is happening in the world now that we talked about offline is that people are disconnecting their emotions from intimacy. They're seeking physical intimacy now. So I mentioned the podcast with Melissa Ferrari where we talked about how to be single in 2021 and beyond. And so people are gravitating away then that we're going into the swipe culture now, right?
Yes.
So young people are seeing these 30-somethings, 40-somethings, 50-somethings who have this trauma in their life, divorce, breakups, oh, I'm never going to trust someone again, and they hear all this, they're seeing it on TV, they're hearing it from their parents, maybe from their aunts, uncles, whatever.
Yeah.
So young people are saying, that's pretty crappy, I don't want to do that. I just want to swipe, hook up, and move on. No chance of getting hurt. So tell us your experience with people, first of all, that are in relationships and have had a breakup. That's a trauma. Is that something that is on the increase or not really?
I think what is on the increase is lack of connection, and people are suffering with that of every age group. So I see all of it. So men and women.
Right.
So, you know, the stereotypical view is, you know, men don't really care about a lack of connection. That's so untrue from my experience. I think almost every human being, that's what they want, is real connection. So a loving, connected relationship at the end of the day. Yes, look, if they're very young, they might want some experience and to that experiential thing for a while.
Yep.
But they get sick of it pretty fast. Most people do.
I hope so.
They really do.
I have teenage kids.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And and they get to the point where they would actually really rather not date than have those kinds of superficial, disconnective, intimate experiences. That's an oxymoron in a way.
Yeah.
It's disconnected and it's intimate.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like soul destroying for a lot of people. So I feel like there might even be a backlash. And I think there is starting to become one slowly.
Yeah.
Because people just need more. At certain stages, they might be interested in that. But that stage wears off. And I think this is the thing that we need to understand. Additionally, if people have been heartbroken, like you said before, they don't want to get heartbroken again. So it's easier to just have intimacy without connection because then I can't get hurt.
Right.
If people have been brought up in an environment where they haven't learnt connection, they can't connect. So they have to clear that trauma from their childhood before they can connect.
Wow. Okay. Yep.
If people have been traumatised in their childhood and then they re-traumatise their partners because of it, they need to clear that trauma before they can have a healthy relationship with their partner.
Wow. Okay.
It's complex.
It's complex. Yeah.
And then I could go on. I could go on for 50 more times about reasons why relationships cannot work until you clear what's creating the problem at the basis level or the basic level, which is almost always unconscious.
As we progress, you know, into the 21st century and then beyond, is there less trauma or more trauma? Because we seem to be more...
I think more disconnection creates more disconnection. So if you were brought up in an era where it was very popular to control, cry and not bond with your children, and you were one of those children and you didn't learn how to bond from an early age, it's going to be difficult for you to bond as an adult.
So, okay, that's excellent. I never believed in hitting children.
No.
Just instinctively. And I was brought up in an era where they hit children. It's like, that's how you discipline your children. And
that's what they thought was right.
That's right. That's right.
You don't blame anyone.
And?
Yeah, but the trauma's still there. You have to clear that. It will never go away. I get 70-year-olds still crying about what happened in their childhood.
Yeah, because back then...
It doesn't go away.
Back then, there was, it was a lot of that. And I never believed in fervorizing kids. Just never felt right for me. Like...
No.
Controlled crying, they call it.
Yeah.
So I used to just barge in and say, no, I'm picking up my child.
Good. I did the same.
Yeah.
I wrote a book about it. But basically, yes.
What is that book called, by the way?
Intuitive Mothering.
Okay. Yep.
Anyway, I don't even know if it's still in publication. But basically, that was published by New Holland a little while ago now.
Okay.
But basically, that was all about tuning into your instincts as a mother or as a parent and listening to your child. So we are programmed to respond to that cry, respond to that child.
Exactly, yep.
And that's how the child learns, if I'm distressed, I will get a response. And, you know, that's how you learn what an emotional response is.
Yep.
Now, if you haven't had that or if you've had inconsistency there, then how can you be emotionally responsive as a consistent adult?
Wow, yes, spot on. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Now, the good news is that is easy to recalibrate.
Okay.
But
how?
Very easy. But again, I'm sorry, you have to work with the unconscious mind because you don't understand what it is consciously. Okay. It basically manifests in the form of things like feeling alone in the world or feeling like you no one understands you or feeling unworthy.
So we basically have a
very
generation
common.
Now that's being raised with controlled crying as a technique with trauma.
Yeah, and then in addition to that, all their connections
are
cyberspace and not real connections. Most of their connections are superficial.
Bingo, yes, yes,
so we've got double whammy happening here.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do they know how to connect when they don't do what you and I are doing right now? There's no eye contact. There's no real interconnectivity.
Yep.
There's no in the moment, I'm listening to you, I'm hearing you, I'm feeling what you're saying.
Yep.
They don't know how to do that. Their parents have been too busy to do that with them. So how are they going to learn that? How do you learn what you've never been taught?
So if you're listening right now and you're thinking, well, I don't have any problems in my life, but at one point in your life, a hidden trauma that you have can manifest itself. Is it worth then just doing hypnotherapy? Like, can you find, if someone comes to you and says, I have no problems, but let's discover if I have any hidden traumas or latent traumas. Is that something?
I had a lady come in once and she said, I've got a chocolate addiction.
Yeah.
She wasn't actually overweight. It was funny. She was eating a couple of, you know, the big family size blocks a day.
I see no problems with that.
That's what she came for. And I said, do you have any other issues? No, my life's perfect. Absolutely perfect. Yeah. Perfect. And I said, wow, I've never actually heard of anybody like that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And she said, yeah, no, there's nothing.
Yes.
And then she said, do you deal with anger? Oh, you know, by the way, do you deal with anger? And I said, oh, yeah. And she said, oh, because I scratched my husband and he's got scars all over his chest because I've scratched him so much out of anger.
Now that's a problem.
That's a bigger problem than chocolate addiction, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, absolutely.
So you see how people normalize things that they've just normalized, even though those things are not. So sometimes we think we have no problems, but actually we're just in denial about
it. Hang on, are those scratches during intimacy?
Arguing.
Oh, actual aggression. Aggression. It's assault. Okay.
Much bigger problem.
Much
than
bigger
chocolate.
Problem, I was going to say. Yeah. Yes.
So even yesterday, I had a client come in and she said, and I could see by what she was presenting with, that she had major childhood trauma.
Right.
And she was in complete denial about it, in the way that it had manifested.
Right.
Total denial about it. Because consciously, this is what I say, you can talk about it forever. And you will never, ever get there. You'll just tell the counsellor. And even if the counsellor knew, they couldn't resolve it consciously because it's not something they work with. It's in the unconscious mind. You can't do the two together.
Yep.
If someone's seeing a psychologist, they can't see me because one undoes the other. They're different. They're opposite modalities. So anyway, she comes in. She says, I don't have these issues. I don't have any of those issues. I knew she did.
Yeah.
And then she started seeing how they'd manifested in her relationship with her husband and her children. And her friends, and how she had to get drunk every time she went out in order to feel acceptable to anybody. Now, what is at the basis of that? A feeling of being unacceptable.
Yes.
So that's when it was an aha moment. Oh, yes, that's why I do it. Because I don't feel acceptable to people, so I have to get drunk in order to feel acceptable to them.
Yes, absolutely. I just want to make the point now that, so when you do see Lynn, and that was my experience with yourself, Lynn, is that for me, it felt also like it was a psychotherapy along with hypnotherapy, because you're effectively a psychologist, like the way you think and approach things. So that was my experience. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Yes. So I felt like I was in a therapy session. But
you
then
were.
At the same time, the fix wasn't, well, come back again next week and let's talk about it for another 10 months.
Right? Exactly.
The fix was instant, and that was the hypnotherapy. That's what I saw from my experience, what the difference was. And you telling me about some of these people that you're seeing, it takes psychologists to really identify what the root cause is and that, before you go on to do your hypnotherapy. So,
like I said again, you're communicating with all these different elements. It's not about words. A psychologist would only listen to your words or maybe some of your body language. So I'm looking for all your unconscious communication as well. And then we work at that unconscious level. So even when I was talking to you, I would have been using unconscious language, which you wouldn't be aware of consciously, which would have made you feel different without knowing why. But so it's not about thinking anymore. Mm. It's about how you feel in your body. So we use techniques like NLP and all kinds of other processes and techniques that communicate at both the conscious and the unconscious level to create a congruence or an agreement between those two minds.
Yep.
So a cognitive therapy is a totally different thing because then you're talking about techniques and conscious behavioral patterns.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Strategies, conscious strategies.
Strategies, that's right.
Right?
Yep.
I'm in this dysfunctional relationship. Which lawyers do I see? How do I get out of it? Who do I talk to about custody? You know, these are strategies that you need to talk about and figure out with someone who understands and knows. Mm-hmm. Those are conscious processes. When you work with me, you work with the unconscious mind, which will guide you to those things.
Yep.
But we don't have to talk about them. We talk about how you need to feel in order to heal. What's holding you back from doing what you need to do? Yep. So often I get people coming back to relationships. I get people coming to me. Mm. They have massive life changes. They send their partner to me because they're having trouble in their relationship, or their relationship might even be over.
Yeah.
So they send their partner to me, and suddenly their partner turns into a whole new person, and the whole dynamic can shift. So that person might become so attractive after they've done the work to the person who sent them that they get back together. Oh. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
So couples therapy
in
itself can be very flawed, because if you're taking two broken people and putting them into therapy, it's going to be very difficult to fix. So you're much better off getting each individual to fix themselves, get rid of all their trauma and all their repetitive patterns. And then they come together like that family scenario I talked about, where the whole family create a new dynamic. And then that relationship creates a whole new dynamic. Yep. And then it's sort of like they rediscover each other without all the baggage.
Right, right.
So it's like it's almost like we're buried sometimes beneath a lifetime of rubble.
Yep.
And we've lost ourselves in there.
Yes.
And then when you work with me, we get rid of it all.
Yep.
And it's like Jack in the Box, you pop out.
Yes. That's pretty cool.
So here I am.
So how do you fix a broken heart with hypnotherapy?
Okay, so that's complex again. Wish there was a simple answer. It just depends on the person and how that's manifested in them. So if it's a feeling, you would treat that differently. So if it's a visual process of replaying something in their mind, which often creates and generates feelings, depending on whether it's sad, angry, bitter, a whole lot of things, you would you'd have to reframe it.
That's highly specific.
Yeah, you'd have to reframe it at an NLP level as well. So you'd have to know how to do that.
What does NLP mean?
So neuro-linguistic programming.
Yep.
So that's talking the language of the unconscious mind.
Okay.
Right? Yep. So that's programming you through language to understand what I'm talking about at a more physical level, at a body level.
Right, right.
So it could have manifested into a phobia. Sometimes a trauma or a breakup can actually become a phobia. So I'll explain what that is. So a phobia is basically a visceral or sensory response to something that is illogical.
Yep.
So if we can imagine something and feel it in our bodies as a sensation, even though it's not real, it overrides reality. So we can imagine this relationship being some amazing, spectacular, phenomenal thing, only all the good bits.
Yep.
And we can experience all those good bits and only remember them.
Mm.
And that can override the reality.
Yep.
And then that could be really positive if we were in the relationship and it was working.
Mm.
But it can be really negative if we're out of the relationship and it wasn't working. Now, if we've developed a sort of what I call phobia, it's a positive / negative phobia.
Yep.
They're easy to wipe out because you do it at a visceral level. You do it at a body level, and that's easy to work with.
Yep.
But if it's associated with a whole replay of memories, then you've got to work at it in a more complex way.
Yes.
So it just depends what the person's doing with it.
Yes.
And how much denial they're in as well. I had one woman come to me, and her husband, she'd found that her husband was having affairs, but the marriage was a complete mess, but she was in denial about all of that.
Yeah.
And when she realized that the marriage was in such a mess, and we had to do a whole lot of NLP to get there, she no longer wanted that back. She didn't want that relationship back because she thought, do I want that? Do I want someone who treated me like that? Do I want someone who treated, she normalized it. Do I want someone who treated me like that?
Yep.
So she became more aware of what she'd normalized and realized she didn't want it anymore.
Yes.
So she originally came as somebody who wanted to mend her broken heart and get back with her husband to being somebody who actually wanted to find somebody who was more suitable to her.
Great. So what would have happened had she not gone through that process with you?
Well, I don't know. She might have just stayed there in that broken heart state, not realizing that he was unsuited to her. Having no power within herself.
That's the key, isn't it? Not having
what we were
power
talking about
within,
before.
Within herself. Yep.
Being authentic.
Yeah.
Being that empowered you.
Yeah.
And saying, these are the boundaries. This is okay. This is not okay.
Yep.
And it's different for everybody. What might be okay for you may not be okay for me, vice versa.
Yes.
As a couple, what's important is to understand that and to communicate that and to be comfortable. So if you're in a partnership and someone does something that you find really uncomfortable, and you are not heard when you say, I find that really uncomfortable. That's a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
Mm,
because absolutely. You cannot come to a place of compromise where you understand each other. So a couple that's functioning meet in the middle somewhere, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yep.
And we really need that communication. So often couples who don't argue, who never argue, are your least healthy couples because they don't feel safe or they don't feel heard, so they don't bother saying anything.
That's sad, isn't it?
Mm.
Hey?
Yeah.
You'd rather be in a relationship where you,
say what you
fight
think.
And make up.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Have a bit of passion.
Did you ever watch Seinfeld?
I haven't watched Seinfeld. Okay. Can you believe that? No, I haven't.
I just remember the episode where George said to Jerry, "You missed out on the makeup sex." He said, "That's the best part of having an argument is the makeup so you can have the sex."
I can relate to that bit. And I'm sure much of your audience will know that episode, but I didn't see it.
Yeah.
But the makeup sex is very good. Why miss out on that?
Let's talk about sex. Do you get a lot of people who come and see you with sexual dysfunction?
Yes, huge amounts, yeah.
And is it more so now? Is it a spike because of...
No,
the advent
always,
of technology?
I don't think so. I think it's always, well, in my experience, and I have been practicing, I suppose I wasn't practicing 20 years ago, so I don't know.
Okay, so what sort of problems are you getting then? So,
well, there's sexual dysfunction, there's erectile dysfunction, there's all kinds of erectile issues that I see people for. There's performance issues, performance-related issues. There's women who have, and men who have the same sort of thing. So vaginismus, all kinds of things like that.
What was that, sorry?
Vaginismus.
What's that?
So that's kind of pain and often emotionally created. Sometimes it's physical relating to sex.
So it's actually painful for them to be intimate, to have sex.
Yeah.
And
that's fairly common. And and sometimes that can be emotionally resolved and sometimes not. Sometimes you need physiotherapy and both. Sometimes you need both. Okay. So it's like there's a physical issue with an emotional charge. There's also intimacy issues that are emotionally created. So intimacy issues that come out of being terrified of being rejected. So I can't get close to someone for fear of rejection or that sense of never ever being wrong. I have to be right all the time because I'm insecure in myself. So anybody that challenges me, I just say, stuff you, sort of attitude, and that's never going to work in a relationship. Somebody who expects intimacy without being emotionally involved or compassionate or empathetic, that's never going to work. I could go on and on and on. Like
go on and on and on. No, tell us.
It's just the variety of issues that I get are just endless.
And
endless.
Can you give us an insight into the process of releasing that trauma? What sort of traumas are associated with?
There could be child sexual abuse. There could be emotional abuse as a child. There could be damaged relationships in their past. There could be trauma that's not even regarding relationships. There could have been bullying at school that they haven't recovered from.
Geez, we're such fragile creatures, aren't
we? Yeah, we are. But you know what? Yeah. You know what I find? If you know how to fix it, we don't have to be fragile. We just don't have to be. Our problem is we just think that things will fix themselves naturally and easily without us doing anything.
There it is right there in a nutshell, isn't it? This whole episode.
Yes.
That is the biggest problem in humanity at the moment.
Yes.
Yep. We outsource the problem.
Yes. I'm just going to go, okay, this is the problem.
Yep.
It'll fix itself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
Or we transfer the problem to a doctor, or we go looking outside for someone to fix us. Could be in a relationship or a new job.
So we either expect it to fix itself or we get it fixed in the wrong ways.
Yep.
Ways that don't actually fix it. So that's probably what's happening in our Western culture at the moment. That's the biggest problem. So we don't know how to fix these issues. But when you do know how to fix them, they can be fixed in instantly, like you experienced yourself, like instantly in an hour. Or two, max.
Wow.
And they never, like I say, it's like that snake shedding a skin. It doesn't come back on.
But does the problem give you an insight into what the original trauma was?
No, not always.
So it can be
hardly
totally
ever.
Something. I'll give you one example then. So these are real life people that I know. Mm-hmm. Right? The female in the partnership.
Yeah.
Male, female, right? Now, the female in the relationship gets very angry, jealous, right? So if he's talking to a girl.
Mm.
In a bar.
Mm.
They go to the bar together and they're having fun with friends, but by the end of the night, it's major drama. It's like the guy has committed adultery, and he's like, I'm just talking to that person, and she gets very violent with him.
Violent.
Mm. Yeah, so it can be. It can get that. So it can be hitting. And I thought of it because you mentioned the other client that you had who left scratch marks on her partner. So obviously there's something there, right, in the subconscious.
There's something, I would say there's something without even meeting them, and I'd have to listen to both of them to understand what's going on and work with them individually. But generally, and this is just generally, there's something that she hasn't resolved with those anger issues. And again, you'd have to look all the way back to see where that comes from.
And
you'd
it seems have to be a repetitive problem with every partner.
Anger is usually about injustice, feeling like there's injustice. So was there injustice in her childhood? That's the first thing you'd want to look at.
Okay, right. See, that's what I'm talking about. You know how to zone in, right? And then that comes out in hypnotherapy.
So it's triggered by him doing something that she's interpreting, rightly or wrongly, as injustice. Now, Nelson Mandela, he witnessed injustice. He got angry. He changed the world. He used anger in a really positive way.
Yep.
So did Martin Luther King.
Yes.
Lots of people do. But anger can be really, really bad for you if you keep it in and then it comes out in these dysfunctional ways. That's like eating poison and expecting someone else to die. So what she's doing with her anger is she doesn't know what to do with it. It's triggering something, I would imagine, something deeply rooted that she hasn't addressed.
Yep.
And that would be something she would have to sort out. And then we'll look at him, because it's never one-sided. So what is he doing? What is he not hearing that's upsetting her? What is he doing that's not giving her the security she needs? Okay. So, and then there's a patterning in him. Yeah. So there's a double trigger going on, probably. But that I'm guessing, because I haven't met either of them.
I'm guessing. They're both super attractive. And she's exceptionally attractive. Like, you'd look at her and say, why would you ever get jealous about anything? Like, why? Like, you could get anyone out there.
Yeah.
So I was just curious, you know, because that's a dysfunction, isn't it? That's a dysfunctional relationship.
Well, she wants to be, obviously, she wants him to put her on a pedestal and she wants his admiration. And she's feeling that she's not getting that in the way that she feels validated.
She doesn't come across like that. She's quite confident and independent, and that's fine. It's just...
But that's something she's not going to share.
It's like a brain snap like that. It's like, yeah, maybe you're right.
Who knows?
Like, yeah.
You'd have to, have to work with her and find out what's going on there. But there's something deep-rooted for sure.
And it, like you said, it would be born out of an injustice during childhood.
Probably, okay. Yes.
So during then hypnotherapy, you go to those three levels you mentioned.
Yeah.
Right.
But by the way, just before we move on, she would have to want to fix that if she came to me. Because if she's in getting something out of the anger and she enjoys it, I'm not going to be able to help her. So there might be what we call secondary gain. So people get more out of the destructive patterns. Eating disorders are commonly like that. They get more attention out of having the eating disorder than fixing it.
So why fix it?
So there's no incentive to fix it. So we've got to be careful there too. You've got to see how complex it is.
Yes, I'm thinking about that now.
Look at you. You're going, well, it
I
is,
thought my
it's
job
overwhelming.
Was difficult.
It's not always that simple.
Yeah.
It feels simple when you work and you do it and you do it with yourself. But actually, it's not. It's much more complex than we realise. You know. I did have somebody come in with a sexual issue recently that I had to say, I can't work with you, because getting such a thrill out of that you don't, it's obvious that you don't want to fix it.
Yep.
So you need to work with someone who, not me, because if you're getting something out of it and you're really loving it and you're then saying it's dysfunctional and you want to stop it, there's a disconnect there. It's not going to work. You really need to be committed to stopping it if you really want to stop it.
Have you ever had a client that is not interested in sex at all?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Is that a common thing?
No, it's not common, no.
Okay.
But usually those people have been abused, sexually abused.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Usually they have.
I only just came across it the other day, actually, as a phenomena. Is the term asexual? No.
I don't know, because I don't usually do you labels. You know me, like, I don't like you labels.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
It just is what it is.
Everyone's like obsessed with labels these days.
No. People walk in with OCD, they walk out without it. They walk in with ADHD, they walk out without it.
Yep.
They walk in with chronic anxiety, they walk out without it.
You deal with ADHD and ADD?
All of it, yeah. Yep. They walk in with their labels, they walk out without them. They become unstuck. Mm. I really don't believe in the labels. The labels keep you stuck.
Yes.
So we've got to really, that's another thing. We really need 100%. To address these labels. There's a reason for everything. There's a reason for abstinence. There's a reason for any kind of what we consider dysfunction. What you may consider dysfunction, somebody might love, you know, vice versa. Everybody's idea. And you know what? You can't judge people. What's right for one person is fine, as long as it's right for them, as long as it's not harming other people. It's good. People do what's right for them, and we just have to be more accepting of everybody, I think.
On that point,
yes.
So I know a couple where the wife started identifying as a male.
Okay.
Right. And so she's going through hormonal therapy to become a male.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what does that mean for the relationship? She said, we're not getting a divorce. She said, lucky for me, he actually likes men.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you mentioned that, it's time that we start accepting, you know, so without labels, do you ever deal with people who, like, don't feel like they're male or female and they want to change and they've got anxiety around that and how they come out or...
Yeah, I do. And I think we're just not accepting enough of the fact that people are born the way they're born. And sometimes people are born with a leg that's shorter than the other. Or sometimes they're born with dyslexia or something else, and we just accept it.
Yep.
But if we're born identifying as a different sex, then we think that's wrong and we judge it. We shouldn't be judging anything. Just accept it and work with it and support people, because we're individuals, you know, and we don't follow a formula. We're not like a car with an engine, and you do this to it and that to it. And every single person, this is why our whole conversation, you said to me, how would you treat that? I wish there was a way I could say, well, you do this, one, two, three.
Yeah.
It's never like that, because every single person requires a different intervention.
Yep.
Every single person requires a different way of responding to them. So I've never met two people that require the same response. Never.
Yeah.
And I never will, because we're all unique. And your state of ease, what I call state of ease, is unique to you. Nobody else in the world will have Sam's state of ease, only Sam. And your state of ease, which is ideal for you, may be very uncomfortable to someone else.
Yes, that's right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my job is to help you to restore and regain and experience full-time your state of ease. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have challenges. It just means that when you have challenges, you know how to navigate through them to take you back to that state of ease.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah? I love it. Yep.
And if you get stressed or tense, fantastic. Listen to it. What's that telling me? Where's that taking me? Is it taking me out of here? Is it taking me away from this person? Is it telling me that this person's actually really toxic? Is it telling me that this situation is dysfunctional? Is it telling me that this is important to me and I want to do well at it? What is that feeling
telling me?
And listen to that so that it takes you into your state of ease.
Yep.
Which is maybe out of the relationship, out of the conversation, into the performance.
Yep.
Does it make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So if we 100%. Listen, if we listen to our feelings, that's where we're going to go in order to expand, to go into expansive mode, as long as we don't feel threatened by them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But then you have to clear all the trauma that created some of these feelings and some of these traumatic responses first. Otherwise, it won't really work.
Right.
And you can't do that to yourself.
No, that's right. You need that someone guiding during that those three levels.
Yes. Well, there's actually four levels, but the fourth level of trance is when you're actually unconscious.
Right.
So we don't do a lot of that until the end. I think I did that with you in the end, but you don't do that until the end. Sometimes you do it in the middle. Look, it just depends, again, on the person.
Yes.
And some people, we go there straight away.
Yep.
But, you know, most people require a bit of NLP like you did in order to get there. So, again, you know, we have to learn how to play. It's very playful, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the other thing about it. It's not
fun.
It's fun. It's not stressful. It's not like
it's liberating.
Hard. It is.
Yeah.
It's not hard work.
Look, I think you make it really, really... I think the biggest hurdle for people is being comfortable in the presence of that person doing it. And like any relationship, whether it's business or personal, ultimately you need to be comfortable with the person you know.
Exactly.
And that's a personal thing. But more often than not, I can honestly say with yourself, like, you make people feel very comfortable. I like the way you went about it, just everything was just, it was honestly, it was like being, I'd been in that room many times before. I was felt very comfortable.
That's lovely
and
to hear.
I think that's a gift that you have, and the words you choose to use. And I can tell everything is personalized. Everything is customized. I never felt like, oh, I'm just going through this trained response. Like what they teach at university, what you do requires complete improvisation on the spot.
It does.
And customization
really
for that person.
And you have to be really connected to the person. So I get into your energetic state, if you like, for want of a better term.
Yes.
So your unconscious mind tells me what's going on.
Right.
And then I have to become attuned to that. So your unconscious mind guides me into taking you into where you need to go. So it's kind of like, you know how people say, I just felt this connection with someone and I don't understand what it was. That's an unconscious connection.
That's right.
So in order to work the way that I do, you have to make that unconscious connection with every single person.
Yes.
Otherwise it wouldn't work. It's not a cognitive process.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I can't even really think when I'm working with people, and I hate to call it working because it's more like playing, but I can't think because if I did think, it would take me out of the connection.
That's right, Yeah, it's really strange for everyone that's listening because I've been through it. It was like you were reading.
You do, you have to.
Like, yeah, the way you took me through that path. As I said, look, I can't remember.
Well, you won't be able to because it's an unconscious process, isn't it?
Yeah, it is unconscious. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But
that's a good thing.
Yeah, but I do remember feelings of being comfortable.
Yeah, that's great.
And it was like you were reading my mind as well, if that's the right word for it, and taking me on that path to discover where that trauma and it's a skill because there's a million paths that you can go on, but the questions you asked led down and then another path, and it was just like a shortcut, and it was like bang, there it is.
Yeah.
So you have to experience it. Honestly, if you're listening now and you want to do some work with this amazing woman, you're very busy. You're booked out, 2 months in advance at the moment?
Yeah.
Book it. Book it in 3 months' time. 3 months goes very quickly because it can be like transformative.
Yeah.
You know, completely.
Well, the beauty,
doesn't matter what your age is.
It doesn't matter what your age is. And a lot of people who come to me in their 70s, they just say, my God, wish I'd done this when I was 20 because I would have had a very different life.
Yeah, that's what I said to myself too. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is you come to get rid of something.
Yeah.
But then when you learn how to drive this process, you can achieve anything.
Yes,
it's like
right.
suddenly the world opens up for you. So it's suddenly like you have come from getting rid of all this rubble on top of you.
Yes.
Into here I am world. Yep. And then you're into that realm of all possibility. So you use it to get rid of what you don't want. And then you use the same processes and understanding to create everything you do want. And that's what I love most. So I'm a pretty impatient person.
Yep.
Which is why I wouldn't be able to work with any other modality or in any other way. I'd get really impatient.
You want results.
I want results. Yeah, I want to see I want to see people change their lives really fast.
So what motivates you to do it?
I'm seeing those changes, just seeing people change before my eyes, and their voice changes and their face changes. Their eyes are open, their face lifts, their expression changes.
So you love it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's like, I mean, who couldn't love that?
Yeah.
There's no bigger gift in life to see somebody come alive before your eyes.
Are you a workaholic? Do you work a lot?
I have a good balance.
How do you say no? Because if you have a long list of people, do you ever get people that say, look, it's urgent, I need to see you, but you're...
Oh, yeah. I have people, you know, wanting to pay me double and triple. And, you know, and look, the thing is, I guess the bottom line is it's just about doing what you can, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, doing what you can and doing the best with what you have and maintaining the passion. So I have to have a good balance in my life.
Yep.
I mean,
what do you do for balance?
Well, I ride my bike, I swim in the sea. I go
even in winter?
Well, not in winter. I don't swim in winter, but I do in summer. I do bush walks in winter along the ocean. So I have to get out in nature every single day and clear my mind in order to be able to, it's like, that's my form of meditation. In order to practice this work, because it's very full on.
To be effective, you need to be a really well balanced.
You have to be
Your
balanced.
Energy has to be clean. That's what I noticed in that room. I read energy really well.
Yeah.
And it was really, really clean. I just, the energy was just neutral, like it was pure. So it was really good.
You can't bring anything negative into that space.
Yeah.
You have to actually have, like you say, a clean space to work from. So, and that's, I think, where the power is, you know, it's like that clean slate. So, yeah, and I mean, and I have to be there. I mean, that's my job. So I have to make sure I get the time I need to refuel and recharge.
And during COVID,
yeah. You
were telling me that you were even busier because you were doing remote sessions and you found them just as effective.
And
you have clients now in England, in America.
All over the world.
Yeah,
all over the world. And it's amazing because I didn't even know if phone sessions would be effective. The interesting thing is that is they're more effective if you don't have devices. So if you just have people listening to you, because most of the time their eyes are closed, as you know.
Yes.
You know, if you have people listening to you and there's no visual interruptions and there's no technology, I think it's more effective, much more effective. Okay. So I've tried both. Yeah. As long as they have a nice, comfortable environment and they're not going to be interrupted, the results are exactly the same, which are through the roof. So as long as somebody wants the changes, they get them. It's just crazy, the effectiveness of it. So no difference, absolutely no difference.
Yep.
My experience.
Now your business is called Harmony?
Harmony Hypnotherapy.
Hypnotherapy, that's it. And you're based in Mossman in Sydney?
Yes.
Yeah. You love working?
I love it.
Such a great spot there, isn't it?
It's beautiful. And where I work, we've got the ferry down the road. We've got everything there. So, you know, it's lovely. If I get a break, I can go down and have a coffee on the water.
Yes.
I like water. You probably gathered that.
Yes, I've gathered that.
I like the sea. Anything that involves the water and the ocean is good for me.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
We all have our thing, don't we?
Yes.
Because you love running, don't you?
I do, yeah. I love nature as well.
Yeah.
I just go for walks in nature.
Yes, and me too.
For me, it happens around the 45-minute mark. So I could have a mind that's just racing with things to do at work. You know, as a lawyer, we're living in our mind the whole time. Critical analysis.
Yeah.
And when I go into the national park, the Ku'ring'ai Chase, so I live close to there. And I live in the eastern suburb as well, so I have two homes. But around a 45-minute mark, I don't even have to try to switch off. Nature just draws you in.
That's what happens to me.
It just switches off like that.
I think
that.
It's about the 45-minute mark for me too.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then you start coming up with all kinds of creative ideas. Well, I do. I kind of think of things that I'd never have thought of before. So it's interesting, actually. I do get a lot of lawyers and I do get a lot of doctors, funnily enough, and psychiatrists.
Okay.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And psychologists, they send me their kids.
Yeah.
But basically, it's very interesting.
That is
funny,
yeah.
And I've had a batch of surgeons lately, which is very interesting. So surgeons, you know, really well-known surgeons.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is a lot of them will say to me, you know, in fact, one of the surgeons I saw lately said to me, and I couldn't believe a surgeon said this, he said a lot of the time doctors do a lot of what they do makes people more sick.
Totally.
Yeah. So coming from a doctor, that was really, really... Absolutely. A surgeon, in fact, a board-certified surgeon, that was really interesting.
Well, you think every time they prescribe a pill, it fixes one problem, causes another problem.
Exactly.
And that's the way of the world because, like you said, we're putting labels on everything. But I love what you do.
I love what you do too.
There's no label on what you do.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I love what I do. I love... producing this podcast for our listeners and for all of you out there who do get in touch every now and then and send me an email. I love reading those emails. So, and it just inspires me to keep producing these podcasts.
Yeah.
And so for this week, I hope that you've gained something from this difficult topic to talk about and structure because it's one of those things that has to be experienced to know exactly what it feels like and how powerful it can be as well. So if you have traumas in your life that you know about or don't know about, I look over to the console every now and then because I see that as like the audience. So Lynn just saw me looking at the console and I can't believe we're talking now for almost 2 hours.
I know. I just noticed that.
It's a fascinating... Look,
how fast time flies when we're chatting. And that's because we're so in the moment, isn't it?
Exactly.
We're on the same page. We're very aligned. We think in the same way and we just get into this zone.
Well, I think we have the same lens.
Yes.
And my lens is always is how can I improve people's lives? Because every time I became a lawyer because I see it as an injustice and a tragedy when someone is living a life that that is really limiting and not what they should be living. I come across a lot of brilliant people, smart people, who sometimes just have one trauma in their life that's just ruined it for them. So I see that as an injustice. And I became a lawyer because I hated injustice.
Lots of lawyers do.
Yeah. Yep. So that's one of the reasons why I produce these podcasts, because my lens is, even if it's just one person, you know, we have, you know, a few thousand listens every week. And every, I think, even if it's just one person that's picked up one little tip from this, or even one person that's picked up the phone or emailed and made an appointment with you, and 4 months from now they've transformed their life. For me, all the hours that I pour in this podcast is worth it from just that one experience that I'm imagining is happening out there.
And it is happening, and you're creating that and generating that. And it's interesting because I come from an experience growing up in injustice, because I grew up, as you know, in apartheid South Africa.
Yes,
and saw all that terrible injustice. So I'm also there trying to create oneness amongst people and understanding and support, and coming from a place of love and kindness.
That's what it is. And that's why I always invite people who do come from a place of love. And I really thank you, because honestly, for everyone that's listening now, Lynn has given up half her day to be here.
And it was a pleasure.
And but you know, I feel bad because a lot of clients missed out. A lot of, I won't call them patients, that's a label.
No.
A lot
no.
of people missed out on seeing you, but
a lot of wonderful people. I often think if I bring them all together, they'd get on so well, because they're all just these fantastic people that wanna improve themselves and make their lives a whole lot better.
I did detect an accent in there, and I'm thinking, I wonder what that accent is. So now I got it, it's South African.
I came when I was very young, 11, so yeah.
Yes, there's a little bit there.
A little bit there.
But thank you again, Lynn.
Yeah.
This has been an amazing conversation. There's so many takeaways. Every time I have that conversation with you, we've had twice before, I always have to go back and listen to it again and again and again, because there's so many different takeaways. But look, really, honestly, a really big thank you for me for giving up half your day and coming here. And
it was such a pleasure. It was so lovely. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
I look forward to doing it again. There's lots more to talk about.
Yeah, I'd love that. Absolutely. So thank you again for listening to another episode of A Higher Branch. Until next time, as always, live consciously, my friends.